to give her a little bit of, like, she didn't say worse than the Holocaust, but she is putting it on par with atrocities, historical atrocities that took millions of lives.
Right.
Versus,
you don't have to give her any grace. Don't. They can listen to it. No. You're that, like, takes
Mercedes. No.
No, absolutely not. I will not allow it. Not today, Mercedes. I have no time for this.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense. Hey, friends, and welcome back for another episode, our second episode of the year of a brand new Rivera and Reeves. And I'm very excited to be back. I guess this is like our official start, because it's the first, like, beginning of the week of the new year. Fortunately, just give Rachel a little bit of a break, because she's coming in early with us this morning, contracting a little bug from one of her littles at her house. How are you doing? Yes.
I'm almost dead, I think. I am close to death. No, I am just so tired. My body aches. I can barely open my eyes. My hair is frizzy. My face feels chopped.
No, you look fabulous. Nobody's seeing us on camera here. So, like, we can just pretend like, you know, even though she was sick, she got it. She got it together this morning.
Solidarity with every family out there that has the plague, because I thought it was going to miss me. I don't usually get sick, but here we are.
Oh, the hubris. Mm-hmm. So just before we get into the episode today, a reminder that we have a refer a friend giveaway going on. We gave you the whole rundown on the last episode, but the details are in the show notes. So make sure you go check that out. Get a chance to enter our giveaway just by referring a friend, by clicking the link that is in the show notes. It's a $100 Visa gift card. We can all use that post Christmas, and then a free annual subscription to our new Rivera and Reeves Substack, which we are, by the way, also offering right now at a discount for you to pledge and support. And it means you'll get this podcast, which is now running ads, advertisement free, which is plus other bonuses. But honestly, for me, like, the biggest thing is just not to have ads. Having grown up in the generation where you had to sit there and listen to commercials, I'm all about not having ads, and you get to support your new favorite podcast. So what are we talking about today? Okay.
Several things.
And we'll see if we can get through all of them. Of course, this podcast originated all focused on the campaign games. So we must continue. And yesterday was certification day. Yesterday, we certified the election of Donald J. Trump.
Yeah. I mean, I think it served as a reminder to me and to a lot of people that not everything is a vast conspiracy. All of the people who are like, that's it, they're not going to certify, Kamala's going to try and steal it, everything went the way it was supposed to go, the way our founding fathers intended. It was nice and smooth and done in 30 minutes, which, cheers. I thought it was great.
I mean, okay. So it was funny because, of course, my anticipation, like, I was thinking about it the day before, right? And I'm like, okay, so tomorrow's January 6th. I don't want to say the favorite time of year or whatever for Democrats, but I mean, they just love to talk about it. You know what I mean? They just love to bring it up. So my speculation was like, are they going to let it be? Are they going to bring it up? Are they really going to lean into it? Because, you know, it's a little bit of a balance of optics, because at one point they have to acknowledge the peaceful transfer of power. So they can't be too upset about it, but also they lost and they're not really happy about it. Yeah. So needless to say, we did have some response about it, specifically from our current sitting president, even though, like, hardly anybody cares. He did a Washington Post op-ed. Basically, the focus was lamenting that people aren't remembering more about what January 6th, 2021.
Yeah, but that's hilarious. They won't let us forget it. What do you mean people aren't remembering? You guys talk about it all the time. There's no way we can forget it. You know what I mean? So when they say stuff like that, I'm like, really? We don't remember? We're reminded.
Well, I think the issue is, I'm not going to round everybody up and say all of them, but it's that I read this AP article, right? And it says reminders of January 6th attack fade in the Capitol as Trump retakes power. And so the way it opens up is it goes inside the Capitol, reminders of violence are increasingly hard to find. Scars on the walls have been repaired. Windows and doors broken by rioters have been replaced. And there's no plaque to display or remembrance of any kind.
Okay. First of all, good. Okay. So, right. Also, isn't there a poop statue outside of the Capitol?
I think that was like a in protest kind of statue. I don't know if it's still there.
Saying, don't you want all that stuff to be fixed? Also, we could talk about it at the exact same time or very shortly before all of the rioting that happened in cities around the country.
No, we don't talk about that because that doesn't count.
We want that stuff repaired, right? Should we? I mean, we could just kind of write the exact same piece about what happened in all of these different cities around the world that kind of lit up in flames overnight, but we're not going to do that. It's just, it's funny to me. I don't know.
Well,
maybe it's because I'm sick. I have no tolerance right now.
I just thought it was, I will say this, it wasn't nearly as prevalent as I thought it was going to be. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It wasn't like my hair's on fire, everybody in panic. I mean, you had your usuals, like Biden did his op-ed and he was like, we must remember the wisdom of the adage that any nation that forgets its past is doomed to repeat it. We cannot accept a repeat of what occurred 4 years ago. An unrelenting effort has been underway to rewrite, even erase, the history of that day, to tell us we didn't see what we saw with our own eyes. To dismiss concerns about it is some kind of partisan obsession. To explain it away as protests that just got out of hand.
Wow. So we could really take the whole episode dissecting that, because
that's just a little piece of the op-ed.
We're not the ones who rewrote it, okay? Conservatives, a vast majority of them, did not like what they saw. They didn't care for it, but they didn't rewrite it. The media did. And we've watched that roll out for the past 4 years, every week, every day on Rachel Maddow. But also telling us that we didn't see what we all, that we're saying, that we're making up some fan fiction about January 6th, and it's an obsession of ours to dismiss talking about it. I don't know. I think that exact same thing could have been written about the riots that happened on their end of it. So
absolutely. Well, and I thought it was great. There was a little segment on, so Acosta, of course, like ever the biggest fan of Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, right.
Who was completely non-biased during the entire 4 years that Trump was in office.
Yeah, standard journalism. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a stellar example of journalism. He had Brad Todd on for a segment, and then he had a Democrat too. I can't remember who she was. And they were talking about this, and Acosta's like, well, don't you think he should apologize? And Brad Todd just laid out the case.
Brad, is it time for Donald Trump to apologize for what took place 4 years ago?
I wouldn't expect Donald Trump would apologize. I think it, nor do I expect Democrats to apologize for trying to undo his presidency by all legal and extra legal means after that.
Oh, come on, Brad. Come on.
No, Jim, look at our own polling. Look at CNN's own exit polling. Voters decide who said they voted on democracy were evenly split between Democrats and Republicans. January 6th was a dark day in the history of our country. Donald Trump bears a lot of responsibility for that. It's something that should stay in his legacy forever. However, voters, they punished him for it. That's why he was behind Ron DeSantis by 20 points until Alvin Bragg indicted him. And once voters decided that Democrats were determined to prevent Donald Trump from being elected by any extra legal means, they decided maybe this wasn't as clear.
I mean, shouldn't your party have just rejected him, just flat out rejected him, from Kevin McCarthy to Mitch McConnell to the whole lot of them? How could your party let him be the nominee again?
Watch what Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell said in the aftermath of that. They absolutely did condemn him. Mitch McConnell was still condemning him months afterward on the floor. Yeah. Nancy Pelosi decided to use January 6th for partisan gain, though. She appointed, refused to let Kevin McCarthy appoint Republicans to the committee.
That's
she didn't let Republicans
either.
Hire staff to the January 6th Oversight Committee. They didn't allow cross-examination.
The January 6th committee had the Republican of all Republicans, Liz Cheney, on
Liz Cheney was,
so
not
she
was not
booted out of conference. Your party.
I mean, she wasn't appointed by her conference. Like
Dick
every
Cheney's
other
daughter.
Committee. She wasn't appointed
Good
by
Republican.
The Republican conference.
Good Republican.
It isn't simply January 6th, and everybody wants to, or at least the Democrats want to talk so much about January 6th, but also But what they don't want to talk about is the fact that we had those riots. But in addition to that, the movement that happened within the Democrat Party to undermine Trump's presidency an entire 4 years.
Right.
Which goes into the frankly kind of long history that Democrats have of objecting to elections since 2001 whenever they don't win.
I mean, those are very conscious omissions that these Democrats make, and just everything that they say really could just be turned right back around and shown to them that they're doing. But let them say all of this stuff over and over again. I mean, I think that they're just so sad and full of rage that they lost, and that they're kind of clinging on to whatever they can bring up in the next, 15 days or so? Less than that, 13 days. So you have people like Acosta, and then you have someone like Sunny Hostin, who just...
I think we need to find moral clarity, you know, in this country. And I just remember after January 6th, you had someone like Mitch McConnell placing the blame on January 6th where it belonged, squarely on Donald Trump's shoulders. Mm-hmm. And then you started seeing people backtrack that, mm-hmm. and losing their moral center. You had Condoleezza Rice, I believe, on this very show saying, you know, we need to move on from January 6th. Mm-hmm. I say no. You don't move on, because January 6th was an atrocity. It was one of the worst moments in American history. And when you think about the worst moments in American history, you know, like World War II, things that happened, you know, like the Holocaust, chattel slavery, we need to never forget, because past becomes prologue if you forget any race.
My head explodes every time she speaks.
Well, and the thing is this, too. Every time I post something that the people on The View say, I get a handful of comments where people will say, why do you platform them? Nobody watches them. They're not important. This is what do you expect? Why do you expect them to say anything different? But what I try and explain is, first of all, they are listened to enough and important enough, their television show, to be platformed. Someone's watching it. It hasn't been canceled yet. And also, I do believe that the way some of these women talk, or all of them, reflects a sentiment in the progressive left, especially with these like suburban wine moms. And so to just act like, oh, Sunny Hostin, she is a blowhard and nobody listens to her. And nope, they do. And I think that there's a lot of people that nod along while they're watching. And so I think it's important to highlight there are some really, for lack of a better word, interesting views that these people have. So Sunny Hostin basically compared January 6th to some of the arguably worst moments in American history. Chattel slavery, the Holocaust. What is going on, lady? It's the most, she's always talking about privilege. You know, it was all of these Hispanics, the Hispanic demographic, their privilege to vote for Donald Trump. And I'm sitting there going, wow. That's a whole lot of privilege to be able to sit on a panel with a bunch of other rich ladies and talk about how January 6th
was worse than the Holocaust.
It was like chattel slavery. You got to be kidding me.
To give her a little bit of she didn't say worse than the Holocaust, but she is putting it on par with atrocities, historical atrocities that took millions of lives.
Right.
Versus,
you don't have to give her any grace. Don't. They can listen to it. No.
You're that like, takes Mercedes. No,
absolutely not. I will not allow it. Not today, Mercedes. I have no time for this. It's just talk about hubris. Talk about thinking you are bulletproof, and people actually are going to think about what you just said as like a novel concept. Oh wow, Sunny, you're right. January 6th with the man with the horns is exactly like the destruction of 6 million Jews' lives. Totally. Yes. You're so right. I mean, it's just,
it's ridiculous, and it's frankly disturbing. Yes. So, but needless to say, we did make it to certification. I was a little concerned about the weather. I'm not going to lie.
For sure.
Are somebody going to use this as like an excuse to not show up or whatever?
I actually want to know how some of them, because I know I heard that some of them went home over the weekend and then came back out. And I want to know how, because I live, in the interest of full disclosure, which I probably shouldn't give the internet, but we live relatively near the area, and we got pummeled with snow yesterday. So I want to know how they did. They all stay in the city or in the district? Because if they went home, they were grounding planes into Dulles. I don't know. Yeah. Curious.
Well, they made it. They called their friends with private planes or whatever and made their way in. Especially Nancy Pelosi made her way in hobbling on her little walker, poor thing.
Yep. And Kamala Harris, she had to certify her own election
loss. Okay, can we just talk about how awkward that had to be?
And but you know what? It didn't have to be. She is just so clearly bitter. I posted on Instagram a link to a video of when the last time someone had to do this, which was Walter Mondale having to preside over his own election loss when he lost. I mean, he lost big time to Ronald Reagan. And I wanted people to go watch it because he actually handled it like really well. He laughed when it got to like the one state and district he won. He kind of just ha ha. When people laughed and other people stood up and shook his hand and patted him on the back. And it was like, is that time when that kind of thing could happen with somewhat jovial spirit? Is that gone? Is that never going to come back? I don't know. It was just kind of neat to see. He lost in a disastrous landslide and he still
bad.
Smiled about it. And Kamala just looked
miserable.
And I get it. She looked great in her pantsuit. But other than that, she just couldn't fake it.
No, it was very dry. It was very I mean, honestly, the best part of
it was Mike Johnson. Are you going to say it was Mike Johnson? Yeah, his face the whole time was gold. How he was not just with the biggest grin up there. Man. He was so respectful, but you could feel it. You could feel it. And same with J.D. Vance. When they would like pan to J.D. Vance,
he's like,
you just, yep, I won.
That little side eye that he does. Look, you can say what you will about Johnson. I get it. There's concerns about him. Is he strong enough? Can he lead the House and everything? I get it. But this little nugget of this tight, like he's a small gentleman with his glasses and his little smirk and everything. At least we have that. Okay.
Do we know how tall he is? Is he as short as I feel like he is?
I don't know. I mean, I could look that up because
not that it matters at all. It's just whenever I see him in pictures, especially when he started to go to events with Trump and RFKJ, someone put on one of the pictures. He looks like the nerdy guy that got invited and he totally has played along with it too. Like acting. Yes, I am the nerdy guy that got
involved
with
all
the
hilarious. Like, Mike Johnson, Speaker. Because I put just Mike Johnson because obviously my entire world revolves around politics. I'm assuming that it's going to know what I'm talking about. And it gave me a bunch of stats of football players that are named Mike Johnson.
Yes, there are a lot. Yes.
But no, there's no information here about his height.
I will find it today. I will find it today and we will post it when we throw up the pod.
Of all the most important things for us to be talking about. So
you need
funny.
To know.
Yes. But I absolutely love it. Of course, Jessica did that house and that she did a clip with the office music and you see him in the background just like smirking and grinning. It was so good. I do look forward to that. So good times are ahead for at least while he's Speaker of the House. And I'm sure. Can the president go to a UFC, not concert, what do you call him? Fight?
When he's president?
Yeah.
I don't feel like he should. I mean, I'm pretty like strict about that stuff. If it was up to me, which it's not, I think that all of them should stop vacationing so much and just stick, you know, by the White House or at their
slave driver, man.
Yeah. Listen, you are the leader of the free world. Have you looked at our country lately? You need to be doing your job. No, don't go to a U. And plus, I think it would be such a security nightmare.
Well, that's why I'm asking. So
I do not think that we should be paying for that security detail.
Rabbit hole there, but I would be entertained. However, I was also kind of entertained by Democrat leadership. Of course, Adam Schiff, not that he's a leadership, but he is a pretty predominant person.
Within
the Democrats, especially when we were talking about this whole Russia gate situation. He did a post, Nancy Pelosi did a post, and I really found these posts. Oh, by the way, Adam Schiff even invited like an officer to come and witness the certification so he could witness the peaceful transfer of power. Because if I'm not mistaken, this officer is like a former Capitol Police, like Capitol officer, was there for January 6th. And so what? It's the whole optic of this poor man who was not able to witness a peaceful transfer of power. I've now invited him so he can come and witness it.
Today's January 6th. This is the anniversary of the attack 4 years earlier, but it's also the joint session of Congress when we will have a peaceful transfer of power this time. My guest at the proceedings is Officer Daniel Hodges. Daniel was present guarding the Capitol, fending off the insurrectionists 4 years ago. Grateful that you're here. What does it mean to you to be here for this joint session of Congress?
For this joint session, I'm happy to be here to see what it's like to see a peaceful transfer of power. And it means that we were victorious in 4 years ago when the insurrection occurred, that we made it so that another election could be held and that the people could have their will represented in their elected representatives.
And it must be, at the same time, being back in this place on this day, hard, living through again what you went through 4 years ago. What's it like hearing this talk about potentially pardoning those people who were crushing you in that revolving door?
Yeah, I don't understand why anyone would want to pardon them. They tried to block the peaceful transfer of power. They tried to stop the results of a free and fair election that's inherently anti-democratic and anti-American. They were violent. They attacked myself and my colleagues. People died that day. There's no reason that these people should be pardoned for what they did.
Well, Daniel, thank you again for your courage. Thank you for protecting our lives, my own included, 4 years ago. And thank you for being here to bear witness.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Oh, it's all a show. It's all just like
very
cosplay.
Much a show.
Yeah.
And I saw a representative, I think she was the Democrat whip of the House, where she brought up like officers injured, sacrifice. It's what are you, and lives lost. That was the other one, the lives lost.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? The only life that was lost mm-hmm. was Ashley Babbitt.
Yep.
The other officer happened like the next day due to it, like it was unrelated due to a stroke. Like, let's get our facts straight here.
Please. Yep.
So, but I wanted to read Nancy Pelosi. She goes, because I'm picturing her, obviously she's not writing this, but I just want to picture her at her desk with her walker writing this whole situation. She goes, today the Congress certified the peaceful transfer of power in 30 minutes. With a bipartisan standing ovation at its conclusion, our country saw how our constitutional process is designed to work. As one who was a target of violence on January 6, 2021, and witnessed the trauma and injuries suffered by members, staff, and law enforcement, let us never forget what happened today is how it should have been 4 years ago. Yes, I agree
and
with you.
And it did get certified.
And it did get certified.
Inconvenient facts.
And I just want to remind Nancy, since she's getting up there in age and she's probably forgotten, that she spearheaded essentially this January 6th committee where she prevented the chosen members by Republicans to sit on the committee and handpicked people like Liz Cheney in order to push the continuing narrative to benefit the midterm elections and the obvious next coming presidential election to continue to push the narrative of how horrible January 6th was. By the way, she also hired an ABC producer to create this entire January 6th committee production, which failed miserably because that's what happens
when you
charge.
Just keep listening to the stuff. Just keep saying it. Go. Yes. Inconvenient facts. No one wants to remember those kinds of things. I mean, we do, but they don't.
Well, and I guess I get really frustrated because I was thinking back about this. And if I'm going to, obviously, the timeline I'm most aware of is my own timeline of life. And every single election, pretty much, that I can think of since 2001, which is really when I started becoming somewhat involved before I became addicted in politics, has been contested in some form or another. Mm-hmm. And it's been contested by Democrats, except for, obviously, we had 2021. And there was a little bit there when Obama was elected in 2009, where people were trying to bring up the birther argument that he wasn't really born in the United States.
It didn't pick up enough steam.
No, it didn't pick up enough steam. And it wasn't to the point where it actually got debated on the floor. Like every other time, it has led to the Democrats debating on the floor because they coordinate together to bring it up for a debate.
Exactly.
And then when it doesn't work out, you have people like Hillary Clinton that spend, and the rest of the Democrats that spend the rest of the term of Donald J. Trump, like trying to undermine his presidency.
Yep.
So everybody is, look, Democrats and Republicans have a little trash panda in them, okay? They're all problematic in one way or another. But this is not it, folks. I'm sorry. Hopefully we will have just as an uneventful
Inauguration Day. I hope so. But for some reason, I feel weird about it. But I'm not going to say that because that's going to stress people out. But I'm going to say it, but I'm not going to say it. Now it's the inauguration, because there are so many opportunities on that day for something to go sideways. There's just so many events and so many people in D.C., so many elected officials and statesmen. There's the balls. I don't know if they're doing the parade this year where they walk in D.C. I'm a little more, like, a little more nervous about that day, about something not saying, oh, I'm not trying to cause us all to not be able to sleep for the next 2 weeks because something epic is going to go down. I just think that there's more of an opportunity for mistakes to be made, for interference of some sort.
Well, and I don't think that's an invalid concern. I mean, look what just happened. We rung in the new year with what's looking, I mean, not looking like, what is, I would say, I feel pretty confident saying, is some ISIS sympathizer attack, depending on the degree of, is he simply a sympathizer that was radicalized, or was he giving some instruction, remains to be debated. And then you also have what happened at Trump Tower in Las Vegas with the Cybertruck, which we're not going to go too deep into what happened with the Cybertruck, because that has turned into a rabbit hole that can make anybody's head spin, because I've been digging into that, just trying to not decode what happened exactly, but a lot of people are, what is it that's going on with that? And there's just a lot of decentralized information going on that case specifically. But the attack on Bourbon Street on I think it was like 3:30 in the morning on New Year's Day, I think is particularly concerning because there's a lot of things that encompass that particular attack. Now, of course, a lot of people initially thought it was possibly someone who had crossed over illegally. It turns out that this man is U.S. born, U.S. citizen. However, former military. Just to give you an overview of those events, the attack happened on New Year's Day early in the morning. It's 13 deaths, 35 injuries. I think one of the officers were injured, but he was okay. There is an additional death because the attacker was killed. FBI is saying, because initially, remember that they were looking for people of interest or other people that may have assisted him. Now they're saying it was a lone wolf that was radicalized. I don't know. And I don't know how much people trust that. I mean, of course, people are speculating. Maybe he got in communication with someone here locally that crossed over illegally. Maybe he was radicalized online. He also did a visit to Egypt for a month. Did he have any communications while he was over in Egypt? So there's a lot of questions that remain about this dude. His last name is Jabbar. But also his background, I think, is interesting because he's former U.S. military. However, it's not like the Cybertruck guy. So the Cybertruck guy was Green Beret.
And from what I understand, the Cybertruck gentleman had a pretty impeccable military. Not that I'm saying, I'm not comparing the two in that regard. I'm simply saying that's more of a highlight of the Cybertruck gentleman, was that he had a pretty rock solid, clean military background. That was impressive.
Well, yeah, he had an impressive military background. He was Green Beret. He had deployed multiple times. He was decorated. This guy, he was like IT office administration guy. So he wasn't a particularly high level guy. So it's an interesting comparison because the Cybertruck situation was like gas tanks with fireworks, which from someone of his level, you would have expected something more sophisticated. versus this guy, he did IEDs and he had several IEDs around the area, which were neutralized, thank goodness. Plus he had one in his truck on his person.
It's crazy.
He mowed people down. He shot a bunch of people. Like, he was actively looking to cause a mass casualty event.
Yeah.
And there has been some discussion that the type of IEDs that he created were more complex than you would have expected for someone in his military background or just general life knowledge. The issue is that it wasn't really something that he would have been expected to have access to. So there's a lot of conclusion about he was probably informed about it. I mean, I guess you can go, you know, a lot of people are like, you can go on the dark web and you can look this sort of stuff up and you can educate yourself. I'm sure, like, somewhere in the back corners of the internet, there's like how to be a terrorist 101. Do you know what I mean?
Right. We will not be going to look for that. Thank you. I have enough chaos in my house. I don't need to get swatted. Are you kidding?
No, absolutely not. So, I mean, so there's a lot of speculation in that regard. The big question is, was this man who apparently he was divorced 3 times. He had, there was a report from the New York Times where they were interviewing his family. His brother said, his significantly younger brother, because I think this guy was like in his 40s. And I think the brother that they interviewed was like 26 or something like that. He said that they actually grew up Christian initially, but then the family converted to Islam, and that his brother, the perpetrator, the attacker, had fallen away and then come back after his latest divorce. And then, yeah, it just seems to be maybe like the down and out kind of situation. A lot of people say that sometimes will radicalize people. He ended up in a really small, frankly, impoverished Muslim community in Houston, which, by the way, did you see that video of the New York Post reporter that just walked into his house?
Yeah, I did. I saw it. There has been so many moving parts with this situation, with the Cybertruck explosion, with what's going on in the UK right now, with everything. There's just so many big stories that are happening. I'm having a hard time almost keeping track of all of them. And so I'll see something, I'll go, wait, which one is that? This tweet is concerning which story? But I did see that one. And then it was followed up by ex-FBI defending the fact that the FBI had already gone through and closed out their investigation, so this was actually totally permissible. But then you had other people on X who are ex-FBI or have family in the FBI saying this is not normal. And so, like you, I'm having a hard time keeping track. But fortunately, I'm hoping with the Cybertruck explosion, you're going to be writing a article about it, correct?
Yes, I have been trying to get it out for the last 2 days, but of course something else happens. I'm like, oh, I got to add it in. But my goal is to get it out tomorrow.
And all it's right. Literally, so look for it, everybody.
All of the, I have no, look, if you're looking for answers, don't come to this article. This article is to tell you all of the questions that are being asked. It's not to give you answers, because that's how convoluted the whole thing is. This one where she walks in, a lot of people were like really upset about her walking the scene. Yes, apparently the claim is that the FBI processed it, handed it back over to the family or whoever was in charge of it.
The landlord let her in, right?
The landlord. And that the landlord let her in. It still seems like was really fast. And
it's not
that
kosher.
Is weird.
Yeah.
And there's like,
you don't see this happening a lot in high profile cases.
Never. It's just really bizarre. And then the New York Times did their report. And so the husband of his ex-wife, who is the mother of 2 of his children, it's his first wife, goes and he says that he had been acting erratically in recent months, quote, being all crazy, cutting his hair, and then after converting to Islam, and that they stopped letting him around their daughters. So something even within, now his daughters weren't, I think they were like 15 and 20. So like I get keeping him away from the 15-year-old, but you only have so much control with the 20-year-old. But apparently he was going through something, and he even, like, in October and November, he reconned the area wearing Meta glasses, which he apparently wore during the attack, but he didn't live stream the attack.
He took them off, didn't he? Okay.
Yeah, he didn't live stream.
So there's no data from
There's no information from when he was actually committing this act of terror, frankly.
Yeah.
But he was reconning the area, that French Quarter, the same area that he went into, both in October and November, while wearing these Meta glasses, which, you know,
weird.
Who knows if that footage is ever going to surface.
Yeah.
Zaxby's Sensation Salad is so much more than a plain old salad. It's a salad, which begs the question, at what point does a salad stop being a salad and become a salad? Is it when you add Zaxby's fried chicken to it? Crunchy wontons? Asian slaw? Citrus vinaigrette? Teriyaki glaze? Sweet and spicy sauce? Or is it when you top it all with a handmade perfectly fried egg roll? Without a doubt, the egg roll. The Zenzation Salad, only at Zaxby's.
But what I thought, this entire thing, especially when it first broke, and there was the initial speculation that the guy had an ISIS flag on his truck. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you don't know. I don't know. It's all wrapped up. It kind of looks like it. Well, and then they unfurled and it was like, clearly he had an ISIS flag.
Right.
He published videos where he was.
He was not like, a stranger.
He was. No. Declaring fealty to ISIS, okay? I'm like, what year are we in?
Yeah, it feels very pre-9/11, right?
Right? Okay, thank you. So I would, like, if you were in your adulthood pre-9/11, stuff like this is, I don't want to say triggering, but it definitely makes you sit up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It makes you sit up because you remember there was a time pre-9/11 where there was like little pockets and little acts of terrorism. Most of them were abroad. You know, you had Yemen, you just had a little collection of them popping up. Mm-hmm. And we were aware of them, but it was like, oh, it's not a big deal. It's not here. This is the US. It's not, there was like this lull of security. Mm-hmm. And then for a long time, we were told ISIS has been eliminated. Essentially during the Trump administration, mm-hmm. ISIS was taken out. But then we have Afghanistan happen, the withdrawal from Afghanistan, which has left a vacuum thanks to the Biden administration. And you're starting to see a resurgence of pockets of ISIS. And now you listen to, have you listened to that interview of the CIA? Oh my gosh, I wish I could remember her name off the top of my head. She was on Sean Ryan and she's talked about how
their former CIA, Sarah Adams.
Thank you.
Yes.
So Sarah Adams has done an interview with Sean Ryan. She's pretty prolific and active.
And she also writes on his newsletter that goes out every week.
She has talked about how they have been reorganizing and training and moving to bring people into the U.S. that she believes mm-hmm. Some of them are already in the U.S. making plans. So this brings this whole attack kind of brings that to the forefront and causes mm-hmm. concern. And we even had House Intelligence Chair Mike Turner, who's Republican. He was on Face the Nation reiterating the confirmations that have come from Christopher Wray himself that there are terrorists within the country working hand in hand with ISIS.
Chair Turner, shortly after that, you said on this program, we have terrorists that are actively working inside the United States that are a threat to Americans. Do you know if there are active terror cells in the United States right now?
Well, I think the issue of cells, and you and I were talking about that at the beginning of the show, are there individuals that are affiliated with ISIS and terrorist groups and organizations that have crossed the border that are inside the United States? Director Wray, FBI director, has said so. We certainly have intelligence that says so. I agree with his assessment. Jim has also seen it. He's testified before our committee publicly of that fact. Those individuals are working in conjunction with ISIS with the intention of harming Americans. The director has said it directly.
They are known to U.S. intelligence and law enforcement.
And we are working diligently to try to take them down, to prevent them from doing so. And that's why the director is publicly saying such. And that's what the new administration is going to be handed. The fact that these individuals are here, that we need to locate them, we need to remove them, we need to bring them to justice and prevent them from doing harm to Americans.
Yeah, this is not surprising to anybody who's been watching the surge of illegal immigration into our country, our essentially open borders. Sarah Adams basically said that a number was quoted by Sean Ryan saying, I've heard that there's up to 1,000 terrorists currently in our homeland. And she said, yeah, and I believe it's actually more than that. But again, why would any of us be surprised when you are allowing in? I heard a stat yesterday on the Tucker Carlson show, former CIA, saying essentially every single day we let in the equivalent of our Marine Corps into our country.
What?
Yeah. And I just went, so how would we, I mean, even over 1,000, are you kidding? Of course there's over 1,000 terrorists inside our borders. Why would that surprise anybody? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I haven't heard that. That is, I'm kind of a, what?
Unless I heard it incorrectly, but I was pouring myself another cup of coffee in the late afternoon and I went, I'm sorry, what?
Exactly. I'm doing that right now. I'm like, excuse
me. But fact check me if I'm wrong, listeners. I believe that's what he said though. But what, I mean, honestly though, why would that be surprising? Think about how many people were letting just that were bleeding into our country.
And it's not just that. Not only is it the issue of illegal immigration, it's just compounded. Mm-hmm. We have the open border, illegal immigration, the vacuum that's happened in the Middle East with the weakness of the Biden administration. You also have our Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, who will not actively, like, verbally distinguish the difference between a terrorist that is influenced by outside terrorist cells, or for example, ISIS, versus domestic terrorism, and has been for the last 4 years trying to pitch to the United States that the biggest threat to the US has been domestic terrorism and white supremacy. And you even had Mayorkas just this Sunday. I love Sundays when you start getting all the clips of the Sunday shows. Like, he's out here after all these attacks have happened, and he's kind of like just bringing it up as homegrown violent extremism.
It's something that we've been discussing publicly for quite some time, George. We have a heightened threat environment, as Director Wray and the Attorney General both articulated, and we've been saying this for quite a number of months. We have not only the persistent threat of foreign terrorism that, of course, created the Department of Homeland Security, but we have adverse nation states. And for the past 10 years, we've seen a significant increase in what we term homegrown violent extremism. It is a very difficult threat landscape, and it is why that we as a community, not just the federal government, but state and local officials and residents, need to be alert to it and take the precautions necessary to avoid violence from occurring.
Look, my issue is that this unwillingness to distinguish the two and like to collect things together and compare, or not compare, but it's like to just push together domestic terrorism or domestic threats, like protesters at school boards or Catholics protesting abortion, to things like this.
Right.
People that are being radicalized by outside, like, you know, let's also mention the rampant anti-Semitism that has grown within our college campuses. That won't be considered a concern. I'm not saying that they're a threat. I'm not saying that they're doing it. I'm just saying you need to be aware of what's going on.
Right.
And they're just kind of like, everybody's the same. Let's not really distinguish the difference, because then what is that going to do? That's going to feed Islamophobia or hatred against our Muslim brothers and sisters or whatever. No, you can distinguish the two.
Absolutely. And I know we're not going to talk about it, I don't think, at all today, but we possibly will in the near future. I'm working on an article about what's happening with the rape gangs in the UK. And that conversation is going to, that occurrence, the revelations that are coming out of that are going to hopefully prompt much needed reflection about immigration and what ends up happening when you sacrifice the safety of your citizens on this kind of diversity ideology. And because that also was covered up over decades by both conservative and progressive parties within the UK. And because all of them, simply stated, very simply stated, were afraid to talk poorly about the Pakistani population in their borders. And because of that,
they covered it up.
Thousands of girls were raped and terrorized.
So the story initially started to gain traction because Elon tweeted about it. And so Elon tweets about it or posts about it or whatever, and it spreads like wildfire, right?
Yep.
And specifically, there was an article from the Telegram that I read where the author of the article himself acknowledged that there was, people were aware that there were communities that were Pakistani that were gang related, that were grooming young white British girls. And this is just a fact. I'm not like, don't come at, they were grooming white British girls and then bringing them into the community and molesting them,
passing them around,
raping them, just like
it continually for years until they reach the age of consent. It is absolutely disgusting what's happened. And it's all verifiable data. This is not some conservative fever dream to try and point out how horrible immigration is. This is actual terror that happened to mostly low-income targeted British white girls in multiple townships in the UK. So anyways, I'm working on an article about that because it's, again, we're getting fed these stories every single day, multiple ones, and it's hard to keep up, but this one is extremely important. And so few people talked about it. Douglas Murray talked about it in his book, The Strange Death of Europe, but that was the only place until Musk that I had heard about it. So
Well, and he brought it up specifically because the new PM of the UK was DPP, I think, is which is like a lead officer, right? Which would kind of, I don't know if I want to say attorney general, like comparable, but just like in that position where they would dictate, you know, what's to be investigated. And the concern and the way this ties in is that because you don't want to talk about or provide any stigma to a certain community because they're a marginalized community, they instead just cover it up. So like here in the US, you're kind of lumping it together with other acts that aren't necessarily as threatening because you don't want people to begin to associate all Muslims with this group. And the same thing happened in UK, where specifically even in the Telegram, that article, he admitted that one of the concerns was, is that they didn't want to give the right wing any kind of talking point. And so they didn't really cover it or deal with it in a proper manner. So then Elon Musk tweets about it, and it's a really big concern. And I think this is an interesting way how it kind of ties together, because this is a discussion, a very important discussion that is happening on X. And to start wrapping us up, Elon has recently proposed a algorithmic change, and the algorithmic change is supposed to, it's like positivity metrics. Like it's supposed to, he goes, it's a very weird idea. And I just, especially because we had the H-1B debate recently, and there was a lot of discussion about him and X possibly curtailing freedom of speech. By the way, they removed some monetization from some accounts. Well, after that happens, he posts this, and it's an, and this is his post. It goes, algorithm tweak coming soon to promote more informational, entertaining content. We will publish the changes to, and he provides an account tag, and he goes, our goal is to minimize unregrettable user seconds. Too much negativity is being pushed that technically grows user time, but not unregretted user time.
Weird. It's odd.
Well, so this created a whole discussion about, first of all, what the heck is unregretted user time?
I mean, I regret most of my time I spend on it.
Well, I mean, isn't that just like the general nature of social media?
Right.
And then he's like pushing more informational. I just find these definite, and obviously we need to give him some time. I find this a little bit nebulous. But a lot of people are concerned about it because then like discussions like the one that he literally started on X, which is inherently negative, not particularly positive.
But necessary. Yeah.
Some people would regret having to consume that information. Do you know what I mean? So what are the parameters? How do you do this? Is this really going to improve the platform? Does it improve the platform in the detriment of the free speech platform.
Yeah, it's weird. It's almost like they're trying to get overly creative now. They're just almost bored. Let's find new ways to spice it up. And it's kind of, it's just bizarre. Like the whole point, honestly, one of the biggest selling points to me about X is that you can go there for unfiltered information. And often that means unsavory content because the world is a dumpster fire right now. And we need a place where we can share the gnarly so that people can stay informed, because often it's not being shared in legacy media. So what does that mean? Does that mean that now we're going to get less of the content that X has rose to popularity because of? You know what I mean?
And I know there's a lot of my Instagram followers will even say to me, thanks for telling us what's going on over there, because I'm not mm-hmm. over there. Because right. now the way the media works is a lot of it starts on X or yeah. TikTok, and it disseminates its way through mm-hmm. individuals like ourselves that have better things to do, but choose not to. And really specifically me. And I just think I am not a knee-jerk reaction person. A lot of people, like the debate that started, a lot of people reacted very negatively, mm-hmm. very concerned, I think rightfully so, about the freedom of speech platform that X has made itself out to be. I will give it a moment and see what happens. But believe me, if there's a problem, I'm also going to continue to talk about it. What I thought was really funny is that X has the AI Grok in it. And James Lindsay asked him, what is negativity? And some of the things that came up were like, criticizing social media yeah, practices,
that's
negative experience
that's
with products or services, negative personal experiences, cynicism about social movements.
Like what? You mean rabid anti-Semitism on college campuses? I think we need to be sus about that. What? And critiquing of social media practices, that is like the whole point. We need to be able to criticize when they are overly censoring or curbing content because they don't agree with it. I don't, that seems like they're going into the very place that they decry, and people flooded to X4 when Musk took over.
Yeah, it seems really odd. And just to clarify, this wasn't like asking Grok, like Lindsay didn't go, hey, what's negative on X? He asked, he goes, if X wants to limit my reach for negative posts, what are the 10 examples of my post that is considered negative?
Interesting. Yeah.
Now, obviously, AI is still, I don't know. Did Elon send them the AI a memo and tell them specifically what's going to be limited? I don't know. Is it making conclusions on its own? I have no idea. But the
point
is that
it was a weird introduction to this. I almost think sometimes Musk is so smart and he's so outside the realm of what we can understand. He gets bored. And so he just thinks up new things. Like he just says, you know what? Now we're going to try this without fully thinking through the implications of what he's throwing out there. He's got his brain is working a mile a minute. And I think he probably just got kind of bored one day. He said, well, let's do this now.
And
without really having someone say, hey, okay, let's think about it before we throw it out to billions of humans who are going to be like, wait, what? Record screech? No, that's not what Twitter's for. So we'll see how it plays out.
I don't know if he necessarily got bored as much as like he got annoyed after the whole H-1B debate. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, in all fairness, he brings it on himself, and we can't get annoyed when people, I mean, we can get annoyed with people, but that's part of debate and argument. So I don't know.
We'll see how that works. And we'll see, because my other thought was, is this some innovative way to rebrand content moderation? And will other platforms follow?
Well, you know I mean, other platforms will follow because X is X. And so if they have something that ends up being widely accepted, and by widely accepted, I mean, people aren't dropping off the platform, then of course other people are going to. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg, to me, kind of feels like he's always playing catch up with Elon Musk when it comes to social media. So yeah,
he did just get Dana White on his board of directors for Meta, yeah. Which
and
okay.
they're gonna add community notes on Meta. Did you see that? They're gonna.
Oh, I did not. Uh-huh. That's interesting.
Yeah, they're gonna add community notes and get rid of fact checking, which I'm like, could we have done that a couple years ago? That would have been great. But yeah, he follows Musk because I mean, for all the things people think about Musk, the guy is just,
I mean,
he's something else. His brain doesn't work the way ours works.
You can love him and you can hate him because there's problematic, and then there's also good. This is a complicated dude, and I don't know how that's going to work out. We'll see how that works out. But we have to talk about some little things. This isn't going to be like, we're going to finish this up as like, we got to talk about this, okay?
And we got to talk about him so I can go take a nap because I'm over here. I'm fading fast, friends.
You're holding on.
I am.
So Hillary Clinton and George Soros got the Medal of Freedom.
Yeah, that happened.
Which is one of the highest honors a civilian can have. There were other people too, like Denzel Washington was there. I don't know.
Lionel Messi.
Yeah. Well, he ghosted Biden.
Yeah. He did not, but he was like awarded it. Who else? There was just some random.
There was a few of them there. But what really stood out, of course, Hillary Clinton and George Soros. This is supposed to be like a medal.
I mean, who hasn't done more for the freedom of Americans than George Soros?
I mean, I guess it depends on the freedoms of which Americans. Yeah. If you're a criminal, freedom for you.
Well, and he wasn't even there. His son.
No. Well, because he's like 100 years old. So his son accepted for him. So, yeah. And then I mean, Hillary Clinton.
She was beaming. She was taking pictures everywhere.
Did you see her hair?
Yeah.
Her hair was like,
she had to win it. This was her moment to shine.
She had the blowout of all blowouts.
Yeah. She was very excited to be there. Yes. Yes, I saw.
So they got the Medal of Freedom. Liz Cheney got herself a little reward for January 6th and being a good Democrat slash Republican.
Good job, Liz. She got a sticker on her chart.
She got the Presidential Citizens Medal.
Sticker. That's what I'm going to call it now.
I like that. I think we're going to call that a sticker, especially anytime one of these people that we don't like, this is us just being petty. One of these people that we don't like that gets one of these awards, it's like, they got a sticker.
Good job.
Job for you. And then let me see, what else we got?
Oh, Biden went nuts on reporters. He's done now. I'm out of office in 2 weeks. I'm just going to let loose. So he basically he always has been a loose cannon for sure. And you never knew when like angry Grandpa Joe was going to come out. But when it does, I would not want to be on the other end of an argument with him at this stage. I can feel like the rage inside of him that like pokes out every now and then. And he definitely.
Biden has always been an angry individual. Man, old man. Mm-hmm. He's always been angry. Like people will be like, it's the sundowns. I'm like, maybe it might be exasperating it
Exasperating it.
Thank you.
Exacerbating it.
My husband makes fun of me because I can't say that word. Okay. Anyways, makes it a big deal. Okay. But he snapped at them because it was first he was asked, do you think Trump is a threat to democracy? He said yes. And then he was asked something about birthright citizenship. And that's when he was like, with your GD life, like, I know more.
Perhaps President Biden getting a jump on those legacy speeches he's expected to give or a farewell address. He blasted President Trump, saying he's a threat to democracy. Here's what he said just moments ago. He also scolded some reporters.
Being the oldest president, I know more world leaders than any one of you ever met in your whole goddamn life.
So, Bill, just reiterate there, President Biden calling former President Trump, President-elect Donald Trump, a genuine threat to democracy. And the question that was asked that produced that answer about him knowing more leaders than any of the reporters in their whole goddamn lives was about Trump as ending birthright citizenship. Biden called it an awful idea.
I'm like, dude, bro.
Calm down. Calm down.
You're gonna fall over.
Yeah, seriously.
You're gonna fall over and hurt yourself. And then just to finish up, so there is a sentencing date coming up because Judge Mershon has decided to move forward with sentencing of Trump. And this is in the what people have colloquially called the Stormy Daniels case, which is the 37 felonies of the hush money case or whatever. That's how it's been addressed, which is, I think, a really unfair representation. But anyways, he's going to be sentenced before the inauguration on January 10th. this is the belief is that it's going to be an unconditional discharge, meaning that the conviction will stand, but he's not going to be like sent to prison or sentenced. So
no fines or probation or anything.
But it does give the talking point that we will now have a convicted felon.
Yeah. Which they're already saying anyways. That's been a talking point now. They gleefully have said that for many moons. So. Yeah.
So he will officially be a convicted felon in the White House if he's going, which I'm going to assume Trump is going to appeal this, but he's got 30 days to file a notice of appeal and then 6 months to like officially file the full brief for the appeal to move forward to see if he can get this overturned and like no longer be a felon, which is really what.
I mean, no, you have stuff to do. Focus, Donald. I get that you want to do this, but if this takes any time away, I'm going to get back on my little pedestal. No, don't go golfing at Mar-a-Lago all the time. Don't. I mean, and I love that he does that. That's fine. But we stay in the White House. There's too much to be done. We have many, many goals, many things that need to be done now. So no.
Well, my thought is that he'll do the appeal because he needs to get the appeal. Right. And let it be.
I just want no brain power spent on this. I don't want him having to appear at stuff and waste time doing that. Everybody already thinks you're a felon anyways. People who care. Well, no, what I'm saying is the people who think you are, it's not like you're going to change their mind if you get out of this conviction. So whatever.
So we'll see how that pans out. And then, we got confirmations coming up, which I cannot wait. I want these things to start already. Can they please start already? I want them to start.
I have an issue because one of my daughters needs an eye appointment. And I called to make the eye appointment and the lady goes, great, January 14th. And the only time we have available for this entire month, and the appointment time is exactly when the confirmation hearings are happening. My husband works, he's got stuff to do. So I'm gonna be sitting with a lid specialist because she needs to get her eyelid checked out, watching the confirmation of Pete Hicks. So that's that.
The audacity of your daughter's lids.
I can't. I mean, she's so selfish needing her eyelids checked because her eye continuously waters. How dare her?
This is how we do. We are like normal people. We're normal people are doing this.
We do have lives.
Yesterday, I was running errands, picking up my raw milk, doing a few things like getting my fresh baked bread, all this kind of stuff with an ear pod in my while listening to the certification. Okay.
Yes. This is what we do. Have other things we do. We do not just, we do it in tandem. We're that crazy. Oh, and I have a correction. You know, earlier when I was saying about the amount of people coming through the border, and I said that with the amount of people that have come through the border in the last 4 years, the CIA agent that was on the Tucker Carlson show yesterday said it averaged out to be a Marine Corps worth of people a day. It was actually a Marine Corps worth of people a month. So 9 million people over 4 years aggregated out would be roughly a Marine Corps worth of people a month. Still not great, but definitely not per day. So I needed to make that clarification. Still, not great. Still horrible.
Not ideal. So,
but facts matter.
Yeah. I appreciate that you fact checked yourself.
Thank you. I do fact check myself.
Good job. You get a cookie.
I mean, I'm surprised I didn't say every hour. Oh, I get a sticker. Yay. I'm sick. Let's chalk it up to me being sick.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. The good news is that with the confirmation, rumors are Hegseth and RFK have the votes, but that remains to be seen before when they actually have to make it public. We'll see what happens. But let's go ahead and wrap today's episode up. Thank you everyone for hanging out with us today. Our second episode of the year as Rivera and Reeves. I want to give you guys a reminder. Okay. Go into the show notes, click on that link, refer a friend. Actually, you know what? Also, let's add a little bit extra. Follow when we post our reel on Instagram, tag a friend in our reel and be entered for a chance to win a $100 Visa gift card and a 1 year membership to our Substack once we launch it, which we're going to be launching it here shortly. Paid subscribers will get the bonus of an ad-free podcast, which means that you don't have to listen to those pesky people sell you mattresses. Okay. Now watch, this is actually going to be somebody's going to be listening. We're actually going to have an advertisement selling you a mattress. And it's like,
I mean, a nice mattress. It's important. It's not unimportant.
Correct. So tag your friend, tell your friend to refer a friend, and they will also be entered. And then take advantage right now. If you go to our Substack, we don't have monetization on, but you can pledge. And right now we have our Substack at a discount. So if you pledge, you will lock in your discount to support this little podcast, gain a community, and also get your podcast ad free. And plus all the other benefits that we have planned in the future for you guys, because we got little nuts.
And it matters. It means a lot to us. It shows us we're able to kind of gauge the interest of the listeners. And we hear from a lot of you that this has become your news outlet, along with our personal Instagram accounts. And that means a great deal because it keeps us going. If the interest isn't there, well, Masina and I have
we're just not animated. Like, this is, it's a reciprocal relationship here.
It matters.
We give you
it
the
matters.
News. You give us some love. We go back and forth. We share because sharing is caring. And please remember to leave us a 5-star rating, a lovely comment. Whenever we get a new comment, we'd be more than happy to share it here on the podcast. Share it with a friend because sharing is caring. And that's it. We are done for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves, where we rant a little bit, tell you the truth, and remind you every day that the media is trash. And that is why we're here.
And we even show up when we are on death's doorstep. You're welcome.
You look like glamour shots right now, Rachel. I am telling you.
My hair is crusty. My eyelash is falling off. No, I don't.
All right, guys. Bye.
Bye.